European leaders try for a comprehensive solution to their debt crisis. Most unemployed people expect their benefits to run out before they can find a new job. China moves to rein in anonymous bloggers and lowbrow TV shows. And an Indiana city tries to deal with a murder of crows. I'm Pat Lyons with a preview of the front page of Thursday's New York Times. In our lead article, European leaders worked late into the night on Wednesday trying to work out a comprehensive solution to the debt crisis that has plagued the continent for 2 years. Stephen Erlanger reports from Brussels that early in the evening they agreed on a plan to inject new capital into Europe's shaky banks to insulate them against potential sovereign debt defaults, the first important step toward a solution. Under the deal, the banks would be required to raise about $140 billion by the end of June 2012, enough to increase the bank's holdings of safe assets to 9% of their total capital. That part was easy compared with the wrangling over the size of the loss that the banks and other investors will have to take on Greek government bonds. Everyone agrees that the bonds have to be written down if Greece is going to have any chance of getting back on its economic feet again. But settling on just how much has been a struggle. German lawmakers did their part on Wednesday by overwhelmingly approving a measure to expand a continent-wide emergency bailout fund to $1.4 trillion, more than double its current size. That's the figure that many analysts think the leaders will ultimately agree on in their talks. The nation's unemployment crisis has forced many jobless people to dip into their savings, borrow from relatives, and do without necessities including health insurance, according to a New York Times CBS News poll of unemployed Americans. Most people who get unemployed benefits say the money's not enough to meet their basic needs, the poll found. About 70% of people who get unemployment now said they expect their benefits to run out before they can find a new job. Though jobless benefits have sometimes been derided by Republicans as overly generous, more than three-quarters of the people who receive them say they get a lot less than they used to earn at their jobs, and two-thirds said the benefits are not enough to pay for basic necessities like housing and food. The poll found that unemployment is damaging more than just Americans' wallets. More than half the respondents said they have experienced emotional or mental health troubles, like anxiety and depression. Nearly half said they were embarrassed or ashamed to be out of work, and one-third said they had more fights and arguments with their family and friends these days. For all that, though, more than half of those polled said they were either very confident or somewhat confident of finding a new long-term job in the next year, and most expected to get a job as good as the one they had before. There's a school of thought in Washington political circles that President Obama's support among African-American voters has weakened over the last 3 years because of the poor economy and because of a sense of unmet expectations. But Helene Cooper writes in Thursday's Times that there's not much evidence of that outside the Beltway and the media elite. Ms. Cooper talks to black voters like Abdul Malik, who lost his landscaping job 18 months ago when the housing market went bust and has been searching for work ever since. He ought to be the prototype of a disenchanted Obama voter, but he says he definitely will vote for the president again next year. So will Dorothy Artis of Greensboro, North Carolina, who's searching for a job to help support her granddaughter now that her daughter is deployed in Kuwait. Black voters turned out in record numbers in 2008 and made the difference in President Obama's victory in North Carolina and some other states, and campaign officials say they know it'll be a challenge to match that turnout in 2012. So far, though, polls and interviews show that though they may not be happy with the state of the country, African Americans are still solidly behind Mr. Obama. Kevin Sack writes in Thursday's Times that it would be hard for any lawyer to fathom a more riveting caseload than the one Paul D. Clement carried during his 7 years in George W. Bush's Justice Department. He appeared before the Supreme Court 49 times on hot-button cases like the detention of suspected terrorists, or challenges to the McCain-Feingold campaign finance law, or the prosecution of medical marijuana growers. Now that Mr. Clement is in private practice, though, his cases are, if anything, even more central to the national discourse. Mr. Sack writes that as one of Washington's top appellate litigators, Mr. Clement is defending both Arizona's tough new law on immigrants and Congress's ban on interstate recognition of same-sex marriages. And if the Supreme Court decides to hear a challenge to the Affordable Care Act, it seems likely to be Mr. Clement who will be arguing that President Obama's signature domestic achievement is unconstitutional. What has he got going for him? For one thing, the Supreme Court knows him well. He used to be a law clerk for Justice Antonin Scalia. For another, he and his co-counsel, Michael Carvin, won the only appellate ruling so far against the key provision of the health care law. Political censorship in China remains absolute, but for years the Communist Party tolerated a gradual liberalization of popular culture. Television stations were allowed to show Chinese knockoffs of American game shows and talent contests, and people could blow off some steam by posting to online microblogs. Now, though, the party seems to be saying enough. Michael Wines, Ed Wong, and Sharon Lafreniere report from Beijing that Chinese officials are imposing new limits on the media and on internet freedom. On Tuesday, the state ordered 34 regional television stations to cut back to just 2 90-minute entertainment programs a week and to start showing 2 hours of state-approved news in primetime every night. Then on Wednesday, the Central Committee called for an internet management system that would strictly regulate social networks and instant messaging systems. Most tellingly, the authorities want to start requiring that bloggers use their real names and identification numbers, not the anonymous handles in wide use now. Experts say the party often tightens the screws when the top leadership is in transition, as it will be for the next year. And Chinese leaders certainly took note of the role that social networks played in the Arab Spring rebellions, and they want none of that in China. Finally, Dan Barry takes a ride with Joy Sakopoulos of Terre Haute, Indiana, a stalwart member of the city's Crow Patrol. For reasons not fully understood, 100,000 crows descend on Terre Haute every year to spend the winter, more crows than the city has people, and the birds cause no end of problems. If they roost in your trees, your house and your yard will soon be covered with their mess, and the racket will keep you up nights. You'll have to run back and forth to your car. And if they roost near your business, well, last year one company had to shovel more than 2 tons of crow droppings from the roof. The city is fed up. "We can't shoot them, we can't poison them," the mayor said in a speech last year. "We've got to figure out a way to transfer them someplace else." And that's where Joy Sakopoulos comes in. She travels the city in the evening with a pistol that shoots screaming fireworks, trying to scare the birds away from public places. It works for a little while. But ornithologists at Indiana State University say the trouble with crows is that they aren't bird-brained at all. They're too smart to fall for most of mankind's scaring tricks more than a few times before they get wise. And Terre Haute seems to suit them just fine. And that's a preview of the front page of Thursday's New York Times. For more on these and other stories, pick up a copy of the paper or visit nytimes.com. From the New York Times newsroom, I'm Pat Lyons.